Thank you, Pat. Always interesting to hear your perspective. I didn't realize I was going to have to spell this out, but I guess I will. Household to infants. How do you get from households to infants? Well, as it turns out, infants are born into households. So if all those in a household are to receive a sign of the covenant, then that means whenever a child is born into such a household, then they're included. That's exactly what God set up in Genesis 17 with circumcision. And specifically in verse 12 of Genesis 17, he gives the instruction, he who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised. And then he explains it. He says, whether born in your house or bought with your money from any foreigner who is not of your offspring, both he who is born in your house and he who is bought with your money shall surely be circumcised. Later in the passage, he explains that Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And then Ishmael was 13. And that very day, Abraham and his son Ishmael were circumcised. And all the men of his house who were born in the house, and those bought with money from a foreigner, were circumcised with him. What it means, of course, is the first generation is a household event. After that, every child that's born into that house is included. So that's how you get from household to infants. In case you're not clear about that, I think that's perfectly plain. So the question really is, if in the new covenant, the entrance rite of baptism is a rite that only applies to individuals who are of an age where they can do the things that Pat referred to, if that's only who it applies to, why do we have so many household cases? And especially the gospel going to the Gentile cases. And in fact, this you and your household phrase that occurs over and over again is a very important phrase. Once again, let's do the hokey pokey here. Hold up your hands. 9. That's all we've got. We've got 9 individuals named in the New Testament. 6 are household cases. 6 of 9. 2 of the others don't have households. Saul, the apostle, and the eunuch. Why aren't his children baptized? And why isn't how? Well, of course, he's a eunuch. And then the Simon the sorcerer is the only other guy. So that is a very, I would say, striking set of statistics to make the claim that something radical has changed between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Now, this was debated in terms of the nature of who's in the household. This was debated in the mid-20th century between a couple of different scholars. One of them was named Jeremias and the other was Aland. The debate was this: does the word oikos, which is the word translated household or house in these household cases, does that word specifically contain children? Would you not even use the word household, oikos, if there were no children? That's the debate. And Jeremias argued very stringently that, in fact, whenever someone uses the word oikos in the Greek New Testament, they're specifically talking about a group, a household with children. It's important just to get the count right. There are 9 separate baptismal events in the New Testament. There are 9 individuals identified, and you see them there. I won't repeat them. There are 13 groups and individuals that are named. Of those 9 people, 5 clearly had their households baptized, and the one that's a question mark would be Gaius. And so we can talk a little bit more about Gaius. Why would I include him as the number 6 of the 9? Because in 1 Corinthians, he's referred alongside of Crispus. Crispus is a synagogue leader. It says in Acts 18:8 that he, with his household, believed. And in 1 Corinthians 1, it says, I baptized, and notice, Crispus and Gaius, 1 Corinthians 1:14. So Paul probably spoke of Crispus as representing the household in the administration of baptism. Otherwise, we would have the unlikely scenario that Crispus was baptized by Paul, but someone else other than Paul baptized his household. That seems very unlikely. Probably the same baptismal event. But what you have is Crispus had a household, we know this, and it says Gaius. I baptized Crispus and Gaius. Gaius, however it's pronounced. If Crispus had a household and it was baptized, and that is pretty clear, well, does Gaius have a household and was baptized? Well, not only that, I think that it urges us to think in that direction. But when he says it, he uses specific language. He says, nor did I baptize also, now I did baptize also the household of Stephanas. And notice the grammar here. Household is a noun, household of Stephanas. Beyond that, I do not know whether I baptized any other. The Greek word is allos. It's a pronoun, right? Any other what? I do not know that I baptized any other. Well, the reference, the noun that it's referring to in the sentence, if you basically understand grammar, that noun is household. I do not know that I baptized any other household. So that means he's listed three households by name. Crispus, we know, had a household. Stephanas, we know, had a household and was baptized. And Gaius. And the implication from the language here is that he baptized Gaius's household. As it turns out, Gaius is a prominent person. You can read about him in other texts, but it's very likely that a household with servants and some man of means, basically. So the referent to the pronoun allos here is household. The grammar implies that Gaius had a household which was baptized, just like Crispus. So therefore, of the nine individuals singled out in the New Testament narratives, six have their households baptized. I call this now the new oikos formula. So in the mid-20th century, they debated whether oikos specifically includes children. I think it does, but that can be certainly debated. But I think the new oikos formula that I've promoted, I've got a paper on this if you want to read more specific detail about it, noticed how central the conversion of Quirinius is in the story of Acts. It's repeated four times in Acts. And aside from the death and resurrection of Christ, it is the most repeated event of any event discussed in Acts. The conversion, says one commentary, very important commentary, conversion of Quirinius is the longest story in Acts, rivaled only by Paul's journey to Rome. And when we read about Quirinius' household, it makes plain and makes clear that, of course, his whole household was baptized, you and all your household. That's what I call the new oikos formula. David Williams, commentator, says this: the subjects of this baptism were Quirinius and the large gathering assembled by him to hear Peter, including, we may suppose, all his family, which may have included children. That the whole family and even the whole household, servants, etc., should be baptized with the head of the house would have been a natural assumption in that society and as a mark of family solidarity as of their own faith. The solidarity of the family could also have adverse effects. That the children of believers were regarded as part of the household of faith can readily be maintained. That's a verse I've already mentioned, 1 Corinthians 7:14, the children are holy. But it must be equally emphasized that membership in Christ does not derive from physical descent or a ritual act. His argument here is just straightforward, and that is, look at the text. It's talking about household inclusion. And my point, in case you didn't get it, and Pat apparently didn't get it, is that if you see the continuity of households all the way through the Bible, and then you have nine individuals, six of which have household baptism, that is a strong indication that we have the same principle, that children are included in the entrance rite of the new covenant, namely in baptism. Infants are born into a house. They would then be baptized. That's how you get infants from households. Not all households have infants. That's absolutely true. We don't know if there were infants in any of the specific ones mentioned in the New Testament. But if we have the principle of household inclusion, then when children are born into the household, they are to be baptized. Thank you.